Doubled your income, that could make a significant impact on your retirement. So whether you're retired or you want to see how soon that can happen, give us a call to set up a free, no-obligation visit. You can reach us at 620-208-6777. That's 620-208-6777. Retire happy. Retire with CB Financial.
KVOA News time is 8:28. It is Newsmaker 2 time here this Tuesday morning, and we're pleased to have with us on the KVOA Sutherland studio line, Mark Schreiber, the Kansas House 60th District Representative.
Mark, good morning.
Hey, Mark.
Happy New Year, guys.
How are things going for you today?
Well, good. A little warmer than it was yesterday, but it sounds like it's going to cool down again, so winter's here.
Understood. And obviously, as we've been mentioning here the last couple of days and reminding folks that the legislative session now is officially less than a week out, I was going to ask you, before we get started and we start talking about the main issues of the day, and there's a lot of them to deal with in an election year, what are you looking forward to the most here with the legislative session starting up here next week?
Well, you know, this year it's going to be quite unusual. It's going to be one of the points I was going to bring up as far as priorities is, you know, we have such a strong ending balance that I think we're really going to be able to, you know, as long as we're, you know, watchful and so forth and not just spend everything we've got. But I'm thinking we can do some really good things for the state overall. And, you know, I'm excited to see what proposals come forward on that.
Well, you mentioned ending balances. Current fiscal year, $2 billion, $3 billion for the next, and $1.2 billion, I think, in unused stimulus money. That's a lot of dollars, Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I nobody's seen that much ending balance. So it's and of course, there's lots of needs out there. And even with that kind of money, we wouldn't be able to do everything. But certainly there's things that we can do to help folks out. We've heard some issues with Department of Corrections, worker pay and so forth. And, you know, maybe we can strengthen some of those things and make the state stronger that way.
Well, we had Senator Longbine in last Wednesday on our chat program, and he was saying this will be the toughest budget year for him personally, just because there is money. In the past, when people yeah. came and asked for money, you had none, so you could say, we don't have any money to give you. And now you're going to have to decide where that money goes, huh?
Exactly. We've got a lot of hands reaching out for it, and we just have to, continue with our process that we have in our budget committees and review those. But it does give us much more flexibility on what we can do. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mark, you know what's going to happen here too, and this really comes after the governor's office announced that the state had an $890 million total tax collection in December, so you're looking at above estimates by 8%. You're looking at above year-over-year by almost 16%. You know there's going to be probably some pushback and possibly, you know, re-changing tax policy to maybe reduce that amount of ending balance that you have available. Is this the time to possibly consider something along those lines, or is there a reason to have all of this money in here besides, you know, at least the short term, getting some maybe, you know, departments and agencies back to a level where they can be competitive?
Yeah, I think it does provide opportunities for us. You know, there's been a lot of talk about cutting the food sales tax. We've talked in the past about additional funding for higher education. Some of these things, again, I think we can work through those on the budget process. You know, just having elimination of, like, the food sales tax, it's a good idea. We've talked about it for years and years. It's about a $450 million hit to the budget. And that continues on because, you know, that tax will not be collected in the future if we do eliminate it. And we just have to be sure in our out years that we aren't going to create a problem down the road. There's also a area that I've been hearing more about recently. It's the local ad valorem property tax reduction fund. that had been instituted way back early 2000. And that kind of refunded some of the a certain percentage, I think it was 3.6% of the total retail sales and compensating use taxes collected in the state back to counties and cities. That has been zeroed out for since, I think, 04. And that might be an opportunity to put some money back into our cities and counties to, you know, improve infrastructure and services and things like that. So there's some things there where I think we can do some good things. People will be looking at reducing taxes, and we just need to do that judiciously and see what the out years might look like when we do that.
Well, I assume, Mark, there's going to be some serious prioritizing, you know, that needs to be done and will have to be done mm-hmm. as the session rolls on to get the money where it will probably, you know, do the best. What about your thoughts on higher education? You touched on this, and mm-hmm. we all know that, you know, the Kansas Board of Regents is going to be going in with, I understand, a big ask for the legislature this mm-hmm. year to get funding back where it was 7 to 10 years ago. Your thoughts on that? Are you for, you know, upping the funding level, higher education, obviously affecting Emporia State?
Yeah, I definitely am and have been since I've been in the legislature. It's, in my opinion, education overall, and that, you know, we've talked a lot about in the past years about K-12, and we've kind of settled on that funding formula and had it approved by the courts and so forth and moving forward with it. But higher ed's been kind of left in the shadows, and we need to pay attention to that because, in my opinion, that education is key to future economic development in the state. If we have educated workers, you know, I think companies will see that availability of that workforce, hopefully locate here or existing plants expand and hire those qualified workers. And we just need to put some more money in. We've got a huge deferred maintenance backlog and just overall support, operational support for the institutions is needed. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to what the exact ask will be and then how that, you know, goes through the process and so forth, how we can handle it.
Yeah, and Flint Hills Tech College, obviously, locally here, too. And, you know, the funding for higher sure. education, you mentioned kind of left in the shadows. I've heard it described on the Emporia State campus, and maybe you have too, Mark, as gutted over the past mm-hmm. past 10 years or so. So, you know, they're looking at some serious budget guidelines that they've had to follow and serious decreases, you know, that they've had to make here locally. So hopefully something yeah. can be done around the corner. What are your thoughts? I know the governor has also yeah. laid out a plan for tax refunds. Your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's one idea. I'm not sure how that plays in with some other ideas that, you know, will be brought forward during the session. We'll just have to see how that plays out. I'm kind of just it's out on the table, and we'll see where that goes. But I think there might be some other opportunities out there too, in that regard. So we'll just have to see how that plays out with some of these other proposals that might be coming forward.
Speaking of taxation matters, both Governor Kelly and her main Republican rival, Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt, have announced that they will make a priority to end the food sales tax, and the governor has at least issued her potential plan for that, seeking lawmaker approval. First off, is this the time now to really consider ending the food sales tax? And, you know, with the governor's plan that's on the table now, how valid is that particular plan and possibly making that end?
Yeah, well, it's a big hit to the budget. It's about $450 million if we eliminate the entire food sales tax. And, you know, even though we're we're pretty flush right now in the ending balance. Like I said, going forward, you know, that revenue is no longer going to be there, and you know, needs don't go away overnight. They'll continue on. So we have to be cognizant of those out years. It may feel good in the short term here for the first couple of years, but we want to make sure in those out years that we haven't set ourselves up for you know, more budget restrictions down the road because we've eliminated that revenue coming in. I think overall it's probably a good idea because it's it goes across all economic segments in our state, and helps those that are, you know, buying groceries and so forth to make that a little bit easier to purchase and so forth. And we have a pretty high, you know, food sales tax now, 6.5%. So that could make a difference to folks.
Yeah, we are part of the few states that have sales tax on groceries, and as Mark just mentioned, you threw out the percentage. We have one of the highest percentage of tax on groceries, of those states who do tax on groceries. So I'm sure that's something that will be seriously looked at. From what I hear from legislators, Mark, it seems like that probably will be passed in one form or another. It sounds like that is a pretty good opportunity to get some traction. Well...
Yeah.
Redistricting is going to be a major player, is it not, Mark?
Yes, it's, you know, besides the budget, every 10 years we have to redistrict, and it's a priority this year. I'm hoping it gets done earlier in the session than it has, than it did 10 years ago when it had to go to a federal judge, and the maps were drawn by the judge, and you know, just a few days before the filing deadline. And so everybody's kind of looking at the maps now. They'll be, with technology, we can create all sorts of different maps very quickly. But in my district, in the 60th district, I lost 490 people in the census. And so that puts me about, 2% or so below the perfect number, which is 23,503, I think, is the perfect number for House seats. But in redistricting, at least for the House seats and Senate seats, that we look at a plus or minus 5% in those. So I'm within that range. So, you know, technically I wouldn't need to change. But the districts around me, you know, Eric Smith's and Joe Newlands and Dave Baker's and Ron Hyland's, all those districts lost some folks too. So some of those will be outside the 5% and need to grow a little bit. Ron Hyland's actually gained quite a bit because he covered it also up in Pottawatomie County, which grew quite a bit because of the expansion from Manhattan. So he actually grew a lot. So his will probably shrink the size of his district. But it's kind of a big jigsaw puzzle. You know, a lot of the population loss came from western Kansas and southeast Kansas. The majority of the growth in the state was in Johnson County, which doesn't surprise anybody. So there might be another seat or two that go into Johnson County. But we'll just have to see how this jigsaw puzzle gets put together, and hopefully it gets done early enough that you know, people know what district they're filing in.
Mark, along that line here with redistricting, how big of a fight could we see here about, you know, some of the positions, especially in the larger cities? I would assume here with smaller communities and smaller, you know, populated counties, there's not going to be much of an outcry about how the district boundaries are reset and probably expanded. But once you get into the larger areas, like specifically Wichita and the KC metro area, how big of a fight could we wind up seeing, and how could that possibly hold up the entire redistricting process just in those two metro areas?
Well, those will be central to everything on how those lines are drawn. And because they're concentrated large population bases, there may be some attempts to draw the lines a certain way, and that all has to, it's quite a process. It's, you know, we start out with, you know, this technology to draw all these maps, but then we have to put it into a bill, a legislative bill, and it has to be passed by the House and the Senate and signed by the governor and approved by the Supreme Court. So it's kind of a drawn-out process, but I think those areas, you know, may be some of the more contentious, especially if we have such population decreases in some of these other areas of the state that, you know, a new seat gets added, say, in Sedgwick County or in Johnson County, how that affects the overall puzzle. So certainly there's going to be a lot of interest in those two general areas.
Well, we can continue to see growth, obviously, in the KC metro area. But other than that, you know, statewide, we've seen decrease in population for, well, almost say decades now. How concerning is population decline here overall in the state? Is that concerning, Mark?
Yes, to me it is. And I think that goes back to my issue with specifically higher education is, I think we've had a good history in the past with educating, whether it's, you know, here at Emporia State with teachers or nurses, engineers at Wichita State, K-State, KU, medical doctors, whatever it might be. And I think we just have to, you know, reignite that that passion in higher education and make sure they're successful. And I think that will start bringing in a lot of different companies that are out there now that are starting and growing. We see that growth from Kansas City to Manhattan with the animal science corridor and the biodefense facility in Manhattan, Wichita with the aircraft manufacturers and the engineering that goes on with those facilities. There's some real opportunity. There's always going to be some areas of the state that probably aren't going to grow a lot. That, you know, there's counties there that have less than 2,000 people in them. They're not going to attract a big company because there's just not a workforce there. But I think there are avenues around that I-70 corridor between I-70 or between Manhattan and Kansas City. I also think, and I've thought this for a long time, is, you know, there's this corridor between Kansas City and I-35 coming down to Emporia, and even on continuing down to Wichita, that I think is prime for growth too, not just from the transportation network, but, from the workforce that's available here. So I'm hoping we concentrate on some economic development issues, and for me that starts with higher ed success, and I'm hoping we can start moving in that direction.
Mark, when we look here at some of the, let's talk about some of your committee assignments at this particular point in time, and then let's talk about your legislative priorities here as we get started here, given the fact that this is a unique year. We've already mentioned about, you know, the financial situation, rare position here for the state. You know, we've got redistricting every 10, in this case 11 years due to COVID, and it's an election year on top of that. Talk a little bit about some of your budgetary and really legislative priorities here with this session and some of the committees that you'll be working through here this upcoming session starting next week.
Yeah, so my committee assignments haven't changed. I'm vice chair of the House Energy, Utilities, and Telecommunications Committee. I'm on the Education Committee, and then also the Judiciary Committee. And I don't have any particular legislation right now that'll be pushing. There might be things that come up here in the next couple of 3 weeks, but from the utility standpoint, I think Kansas is really quite a diverse energy state, and that started 15, 20 years ago, trying to diversify our fuel sources for energy production. And what I'd like to see is, you know, that we don't do anything that might hamper that development or sustainability for those folks. And, you know, we have Wolf Creek just, you know, what, 30 miles from us here. I worked out there. You know, it's licensed life comes up in 2045, which really isn't all that long away. And, you know, I'd like to see it keep running. Now, there are certain technical issues you have to take a look at there. But so I've kind of been talking to other state legislatures and so forth, what they've done with their commercial nuclear plants in their states to keep them operating. I don't know if those will be viable here in Kansas, but I think Wolf Creek's been a great facility for us, and hopefully it can continue to be that way. There's a lot of stuff going on with telecommunications all the time. It's a ever-changing field and growing. So I'm sure there might be a few issues that come up this year in that area. As far as education in the House Education Committee, we haven't gotten too much into really strong policies, but I hope I'm going to talk with the chairman about at least having the Board of Regents and possibly the higher ed institutions too come in and talk to us in the committee about their needs and what they're accomplishing now and what they could accomplish in the future. We've heard the past few years that I've been on that committee from K-12 groups, but I would really like to start hearing from the higher ed and make sure my colleagues also have a clear idea of what higher ed is doing and can do in the state. Not every colleague has a community college, technical college, or Regents University in their backyard. So I want to make sure those folks know what's going on and the good things that can come from that. Judiciary is an open book to me. I'm not an attorney, but I'm fascinated by the field, and there's always issues that come up. It's one of the busiest committees in the legislature, and I really enjoy being part of it.
Well, we have many more topics we can touch on, but time will restrict us venturing into everything. But, you know, we couldn't let you go, Mark, without bringing up COVID, and we're still battling with COVID issues. High numbers still here, and news across the country, COVID numbers are up, especially amongst the 5 to 11-year-old demographic. And I know Governor Kelly said recently it was too premature, according to her, to consider whether the state should mandate the COVID-19 vaccine for school kids. There have been some states, I think, that have done that. Obviously, you're still going to be dealing with COVID issues, are you not?
Yes. You know, I wish I knew for how long. We were just talking in amongst my family this morning about, you know, how long this Omicron variant will be a problem, and hopefully it's a quick spike and then a quick decline, but we just don't know. And you know, we're going to have to be careful again when we convene next week. I don't know, right now there haven't been any special precautions made. But, you know, we'll have to be alert to those. And, you know, I've pushed vaccines and the booster all through the pandemic, and I'm still supportive of them and encourage everyone to get that. You know, if it gets to be, you know, a question on mandates, I'd say at this point I don't know the mandates make that bigger difference, just because of the resistance that's out there among some folks. And you know, I guess my my view right now is to keep talking about it, keep encouraging, and see what we can do to get people to get vaccinated, because that's really how we get out of the pandemic is get people vaccinated and get back to, you know, our normal course of business.
Well, Mark, really appreciate your time here today, and thank you for your willingness to keep us updated here throughout the course of your time here in the legislature, and we really look forward to getting your perspective here this year, considering all the unique aspects of it.
Yeah, well, thank you, guys. The service you provide on getting all of us together and doing these kind of interviews is important, I know, to the community and the area, and, you know, it's an excellent way for us to talk about these issues and let people know what's going on. And I'm sure as the session progresses that we'll be talking again. So thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I mentioned election year. Obviously, that's kind of plays into to some, you know, degree. Mark, would you agree with on how some things will play out this year?
How do you mean?
I mean, as far as being in an election year, some of the people that may be up for re-election, could it affect maybe in some way how things will play out overall in some aspects?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it definitely will. Historically, election years have been filled with, you know, some feel-good legislation, I don't expect that to be any different this year. Of course, there'll be lots of different issues, not all of them are just feel-good type of things, but there'll be certainly those instances where, you know, we can, you know, cut some taxes or provide some, you know, relief in some way to businesses or individuals. You know, we'll certainly hopefully find ways to do that, and of course, you know, with a strong ending balance projected, that you know, hopefully we can have the capability to do that more than we've been able to in the past.
All right. Will Mark Schreiber be on the ballot?
I will. I haven't filed yet, but
okay.
I figured when I go up to Topeka, I'll walk across the street and file over the Secretary of State's office and get my name there. So, yeah.
Good to hear.
Sounds good.
Well, Mark, hey, thank you for your time. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, and have a great rest of the day.
You too. Happy New Year. That's 60th District State Representative Mark Schreiber on our legislative preview, Chuck.
All right. I want to let you know that we've got three interviews in the 8 o'clock hour tomorrow. The Newsmaker 2 will be Pastor Cheryl Henson of First Congregational Church talking about the opening of the baby closet coming up here this weekend. Then we'll have Ron Hyland, 51st District Representative from Wamego. He'll be on the Newsmaker 3 slot around 8:30 here tomorrow morning. And then we'll close out the 8 o'clock hour with Lyon County History Center Director Greg Jordan right around 8:50 Wednesday.
And our Newsmaker 2 brought to you this morning by CB Financial. Retire happy. Retire with CB Financial. See Craig Barnwell at 517 East 6. Craig feels the income is the outcome that matters. Call Craig at 620-208-6777 for a free consultation. CB Financial, Craig Barnwell. It's 8:55.
Stranded drivers are finally moving again on I-95 in Virginia between D.C.